we go. It's episode number 51 of We Talk Comics. WTC is back on the air and in your ear. I am Mo, Mo at We Talk Podcast, M-O, no E on my name, and Mo underscore We Talk. And I'm going to go to everybody, and we're going to get everybody to introduce themselves by telling us who their favorite Transformer is. Brett.
All right. My favorite Transformer, I'm going to have to go with Jazz. I like Jazz. Alternately, I kind of like Rodimus Prime.
That's respectable choices. All right, then, Chris, what about you?
I'm going with Bumblebee. He sucks, but so do the Transformers.
Are you sure you're not basing that just on the movies? Come on now.
The animated movie is brilliant.
Well, brilliant might be a little bit of a stretch, Brett.
Brilliant for an 80s animated movie.
Yeah,
I think brilliant for an animated movie about Transformers is really it is the best of the best when it comes to that.
Well, I am comparing it to the Michael Bay movies. So.
Yeah, exactly. In comparison to that, it's enjoyable as hell, but I don't know if I'd call it. Anyways, Keith, go ahead.
I'm gonna say Shockwave. I think a cassette recorder is, becoming more and more archaic. So I like him for the nostalgia factor.
And he sounds really cool in the animated show.
Actually, I was thinking of going with Shockwave myself. I'm going with Gears. I love Gears because he's the guy who teamed up with Spider-Man. That's how I first discovered the Transformers. Issue number 3. All right, and this show is going to be called The Big...
No one picked the Dinobots?
Not a single
Grimlock.
Well, you didn't pick the Dinobots. What's your problem?
Well, they suck, too.
How much you want for a dollar?
Bumblebee needed some love.
There you go. Oh, Bumblebee, I hate that little sucker. Anyways, let's move on. This show is going to be, because this is episode number 51, we're calling it, like I say, The Big Picture. The concept of this particular show is that we're all basically going to go to the other guys and they're going to pitch an idea for a revamp of a comic book line, book, character, whatever. The other guy's going to act with, as editors, talk it over and greenlight or not greenlight it. So we think that's going to be a lot of fun. But first off, of course, we have the weekly news with Cub Reporter K, sponsored by the very best comic book news site on the planet, Comicosity. Keith, why should everybody visit Comicosity?
Comicosity has news, reviews, preview pages. It has information on what's coming up in Marvel Now, which I would not be able to keep track of any of that in Marvel Now stuff if it wasn't for Comicosity, because the product launch has been horrible. So thankfully Comicosity is keeping all of that material in one place.
Don't forget the interviews.
And interviews. Interviews with some of the hottest talent in comics.
That's true. And hey, don't forget, there's a couple guys, really cool guys that I know, who write reviews for that website, who also co-host this show with me. Larry and Mo.
Or maybe Brett and Keith, I forget. Yeah.
It was Brett and Keith. Good save. Good save, Chris.
Which
Brett.
One do you get to be, Keith?
Well, Keith gets to be Mo.
Well, we know Chris is the shimp.
Chris is the ship. Awesome. So now let's get to it. The weekly news with Cub Reporter K.
All right. Well, we've got a couple of DC news coming out of the solicits. GI Combat has been canceled at number 7. This is the first of the Wave 2 books that just couldn't find its footing. The upshot is, they tried this with Men of War that didn't catch it. It canceled at number 8. They relaunched it more or less as GI Combat, and it's good in 7. So I wouldn't expect a war book coming in the next wave. There will be a crossover coming up with Eclipso, Return of the Black Diamond.
Crossover with where? What books?
It is coming in a whole bunch of the January books.
A whole bunch.
Which I didn't write down.
You know where you can find that information.
If you go to Comicosity. And
I may do that just now. You keep talking, and let's go find out.
All right. I'm just hoping they'll be all the ones with a plastic diamonds glued to the cover, right? They'll do that again?
That would be excellent. That's the reason that I would buy them.
Yeah, especially if you get a digital version. That'll be really interesting.
I would like a downloadable version that's on a diamond that is like a memory stick.
Well, Brett, now you're just being greedy.
Like the digital omnibus edition.
Or perhaps a marketing genius?
Well, Keith, you keep on talking. We'll come back to that because I'm having a little problem loading the page here.
I don't even think it matters what it crosses over in.
I'm just thinking it's not going to be Batman.
No, it's not the Batman books, which is Batman is wrapped up in the Death of the Family crossover, and the Superman books are wrapped up in their own crossover.
So it's
within the, I believe it's the Young Justice line.
Okay, so they've gone crossover crazy though. Over at DC now again.
Yeah, they're kind of more
new 52, same as the old 52.
Well, they're contained events. I mean, they're all something
so
like that. The family is until Trinity War. I mean, Trinity War we do expect will expand out into the rest of the universe. The Night of the Owls was within the Batman books, and the Third Army, which is going on in Green Lantern, is within those books.
Crossovers are nothing but gateway drugs.
I think Brett's right. It doesn't matter too much. I think we've covered that one. Let's move on to the next topic. What else we got in the news?
We're getting the third miniseries of Palmiotti and Gray's rebuilding of the Freedom Fighters. The next one will be the Human Bomb, which will follow up on Phantom Lady. And Grant Morrison said some interesting things this week about why he's leaving DC Comics, why he's leaving mainstream, going into quote-unquote creator-owned. And he had some kind of sharp words to say about fandom, about that just there is no way to make fans happy. If you are negative, they'll complain that you're negative for what we work on. If you are positive, then you're just defending the corporate hierarchy. He had some kind of sharp things to say.
I don't know if I completely understand his point, to be honest with you. Is he saying that about his quotes in his interviews, or is he saying that about his books?
Saying that about what people... He's talking about fans specifically. People that make personal attacks. For example, people that are on podcasts that might refer to Dan DiDio as a dildo. Now we don't know any. We wouldn't allow anything like that on our show. But there are people that make those kinds of personal attacks on creators. And Morrison has gotten he got a lot of flack for his book Super Gods, which some people saw as corporate chilling.
I think maybe he's Googled his own name one too many times.
There might be something to that, yeah. You know what? If you want to be in the public eye, you got to develop a thick skin.
And this would normally be something I would say is a spoiler. But actually, the reason that I'm bringing it up in the news is because I want to talk about spoilers. Now, Marvel gets a lot of flack for spoilering, and there was a big death in AVX number 11 that they spoiled with a press release of, hey, this character dies at the end of AVX number 11. We talked about that last week.
Yeah, and then you were like, should we spoil this? And I was like...
Yeah, and we had that discussion, and we've had this discussion a couple of times about what is a spoiler, and when is it okay, when is it not, when is it so public that it's not worth pretending. In this case, it is... this month's issue of Ultimate Avengers has not come out yet, or is just coming out this week, and they released a spoiler for next month's Ultimate Avengers. They released a spoiler for number 16, and number 15 just came out.
Of course, it's Ultimate Avengers, so who cares?
Yeah, those 20 people will be pissed.
Exactly.
But it raises a question, though, do we want to be surprised?
Do we want to be surprised? Surprises have been some of my best moments ever in comic book history. On the other hand, I wasn't surprised with the death of Superman. It still hit me when it happened. So, I mean, it's all in the execution. You gotta build some money. They gotta promote. I mean, I think at some point in time, the idea of mysteries, what's gonna happen, gets old to fans, and they do want to know what's going on. But
it's called Apollo 13 syndrome.
Well, yeah, but you know what? Yeah. But honestly, I mean, previews, I'm not sure if it still is, but previews used to sell a lot. Previews gave you a lot of spoilers, and yet people were buying it so they could see what's coming out in the next couple months and make plans for it. I'm not sure it's a bad thing.
Well, I should say this. Ultimate Comics, Ultimates. I always screw that up.
Ultimate Avengers, Ultimates.
I can't make myself. I've tried and tried and can't make myself care.
Yeah, ultimately, we don't care.
And so, yeah, it's this week's issue is 15, and then next week's, it's actually only 1 week later, is number 16. And what's coming up is that through some thing that makes sense within the Ultimate Universe, Captain America gets elected president.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, like that really matters in the Ultimate Universe.
I saw it, and I actually immediately forgot it because that was how much it mattered to me.
Yeah. I guess he wasn't president, but I mean, Lex Luthor's being president, that didn't matter. Iron Man was what? Secretary of State?
I know he was defense minister for a while, but
defense minister, that was it. Yeah, I mean,
it wouldn't be. Secretary of Defense, maybe.
Secretary of Defense, something like that. Whatever it is, I don't know. I'm Canadian.
That's right. Yeah, we're translating this. We've got a metric government.
That's right. Yes. So Defense Minister is really yes.
Yeah. But either way.
If he was Canadian, he would have been Defense Minister.
The bigger news is that Booster Gold's Canadian.
He is indeed.
That is huge news. Keith, how can you not talk about that? It's an excuse to talk about Booster Gold. Get to kissing up.
I take my shots where they're one of the right shots. I don't...
You know what? Now that the big trend is to turn all the characters Canadian, I can't wait to find out that Captain America is actually Canadian. That will be... Now, that will be a spoiler.
Yeah, Smallville is actually in Ontario.
Awesome. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, Canadian helped create it. All right. Where are we going to from here, Keith?
Just a quick look, because we didn't talk about these last week. Just sales numbers from August. We do have AVX number 9 and 10 were the top books, floating around 170,000 copies. Then Batman, Justice League, and Amazing Spider-Man. Before
those
Watchmen,
seem like fairly healthy numbers for this day and age.
They're doing pretty well. I mean, Batman's at 125,000. It's edged ahead of Justice League with the number 12s. So it's become the top book. Strength of the movie, I imagine, would be doing that. One of the interesting numbers I saw was Before Watchmen, Rorschach. 85,000 copies for its first issue is the estimate. We always get these numbers from Comic Chronicles. Now that's almost 20% less than the other number ones. Now this was expected to be, you know, one of the top ones, but the stores have clearly rolled back what they're getting here. What's some feeling on why retailers would have been a lot more nervous about this one?
I think you've summed it up to a large degree. It came out so much. I mean, the original Before Watchmen came out, what, like 6 weeks earlier than that? So by the time you get there, I mean, you're there probably a little bit more. The feeling that the enthusiasm for new number ones in this relaunch might have worn off within their their shop, and just a fear. I think that's my theory. It's just kind of because it rolled out so much later that they just kind of went, okay, people won't be as into this because it isn't as fresh now.
They could also be worried about more adult content in it than some of the others.
I don't know how you'd be more worried about more adult content than some of the others. I don't know about that. Comedian certainly would seem to me to have more adult content.
Oh, it does, and you can say that upon reading.
Silk Spectre.
I think that, you know, if you were just going based on Rorschach the character before reading.
I was wondering if just trade waiters.
Yeah, I was wondering that too, Chris. I was wondering if, you know, those first issues, there was such a sense you had to be there the first day and had to have them. And now that a few more issues have come out, I've actually fallen behind in one or two of them, because if I don't read it now till the trade, then that's fine. I will read it in the trade in, you know, early next year. And I'm less concerned with, you know, I'll be on for Rorschach, like, as soon as it comes out issue. But the rest of them, I usually read miniseries as an arc anyway.
All right. What else you got, Keith?
That'll be it. And that's the news.
That is the news. News this week was sponsored by Comicosity, if I forgot to mention. Go visit them, damn it. The big picture, like we say, is an idea. We're all going to pitch an idea for some revamps, reboots, whatever the hell you want to call it. Some refreshing. And we're going to go around. Everybody's going to get their shot here at a couple different things. Hopefully we'll get two in of everybody. We'll kind of see how it goes time-wise. But we're going to open up with Chris, because I know he actually has three. So we'll open up with him here and let him make the first pitch. You're a writer. We're the editors. Sell us on your project.
All righty. I actually decided to go back and take another look at one of my favorite characters, Conan. Now, Arnold Schwarzenegger's movie, directed by John Milius, is a wonderful movie. However, I think Arnold Schwarzenegger's portrayal of Conan as a stupid barbarian really hurt the property. And as evidence, I'm going to throw up the most recent Conan the Barbarian movie. And I think the stupid take is the wrong way to go. Now, to correct this little flaw in what people perceive as Conan, because I believe he's a smart mercenary character, is a book I'm pitching called Conan the Timeless. Now, this is an anthology series. We'll write it in four or five issue story arcs, and each arc will displace Conan from his natural time period and put him in a different time period, much like an Elseworld story. He will belong to the time we're presenting this story. So I imagine that we'll get noir stories with Conan as the protagonist. We'll get Conan as a mercenary in the Afghanistan war. Taking the whole barbarian aspect out, I would like to explore the character of Conan without the preconceived notions of what Conan brings. I would love to see a Yojimbo-type story told with Conan.
Now, it's not your saying not that he's time-traveling and placing his different areas, just the characters transplanted, the characters in that era, but he's still the exact same character, but not a time-traveling character. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. In fact, we could actually adapt Robert E. Howard's original stories to take place in other time periods.
Interesting. Brett, what do you think? Chris, you're out of this conversation now. Brett, all right. Let me ask you a question. Brett.
Well, if it was time traveling, then I would pretty much automatically shut it down on my part. It sounds fairly interesting. My biggest concern is that, you know, I don't know that Conan is a terribly big seller, and I don't know that too many people would be able to get a long-term connection with the character if you kept putting him into the different time areas. And, you know, for me, there's probably story arcs that I would really like, and there's probably story arcs that I wouldn't like so much. So, I would, I would probably be on the fence. If the other two fellows liked it, then I would, then I'd give it the go-ahead. If the other two fellows didn't like it, then I'd probably lean more towards that.
It's definitely, I definitely look at this, and I think this is the type of thing that some fans of the character are going to really, really love. Some might be pissed off. Let me tell you, I think that what we're looking at here is a book that's never going to be a big seller, like you said, because it is a niche book. That said, it's probably one of those things that has potential to be Eisner Award winning, and that type of thing. I think I could see strong trade paperback sales of it. We can probably get this into different markets and bookstores and that type of thing, based on the idea that it is Conan. I think there's enough intriguing story elements here. And I would have liked to have heard one more instead of just basic idea. I would like to have heard a strong story pitch from it. Not just so it sounds like more like this guy's coming in here to me to be the editor for this book and not to be so much the creative force from a writing perspective. But, you know, I'm intrigued. I don't know. What do you think there, Keith? Should we green light this?
Well, I think talking about Elseworlds, like the reason why the Batman Elseworlds work is that you know the four or five elements that are key to making Batman work. You know the four or five elements that are key to making Superman work. And then you apply that, those couple of elements to a different time period, a different, you know, the Old West or the future or et cetera. I think approaching the problem of people don't understand the core of Conan with something that requires you to understand the core of Conan is counterintuitive. I don't know how you explain the character when I don't have those four or five things. I don't know what the four or five things are that make Conan Conan. When I grew up, I never could tell the difference between a Conan story and a Cull story.
Yeah, you know what? You probably do have a good point there, actually. While we probably get some intriguing storylines, what happens when we get a writer who has a completely different take on what that character is, and we're doing an anthology book, and it's jumping around all these different universes, it couldn't make for a mess. I mean, we talk about the potential for good. Let's talk about the potential for bad, Brett. What do you think?
Oh, I mean, it's like I said earlier. I definitely think that that some of the storylines could potentially be rocky, and some of them could be very good. And I think it's that dichotomy that I struggle with.
All right, I'm going to say I'm worried about it, but I'm intrigued enough that I'm personally going to give it a go ahead. Keith, what do you say?
So I'm going to give it a mini series.
Brett?
With a passionate, with it, you know, for whoever would write the book, if they were impassioned or completely passionate about it, then I would greenlight it. If not, if I didn't catch enough passion, then I'd say no go.
You say an anthology book, hey, maybe one guy does write all the stories. Chris, what do you say? Would it be one writer or would you want to farm this out?
I'd like to farm this out to see what, I definitely would like a couple story arcs myself. But I would like a rotational talent team. And it's not to supplant the current Conan titles. This is an extra Conan title.
I tell you what, I think what we should do is we say, let's give them a one-shot anthology or a miniseries and see what happens from it. You guys say?
Let's do it.
Sure.
Let's do it. All right. That's it. That's the concept. I love it. Let's go through. Brett, you got one?
Well, I have a few now. I've taken it a little bit differently than I know that you really want it to go, because in all fairness, I don't think that
there's
I would
There's no
way
be, we want to go. You pitch it.
I don't think that I would be right for writing anything that I'm pitching today. But the concepts that I'm pitching, I think are pure gold. All right. So the first one that I'm going to pitch is because one of the biggest problems with comic books is, and this is kind of what I'm going after here, is we're looking at trying to pitch concepts that are going to appeal to women and children, and then another thing that appeals to, well, me, But that's down the road. The first one that I want to pitch is a series on Bruce Wayne. Because I'm tired of Batman. It's not that I don't like Batman, but I think Batman's great. But the thing is that I really want to see a Bruce Wayne series where you kind of focus more on him, where he's not necessarily going to become Batman all the time, but in those off moments when he's not Batman. And I would like to see this series written by a woman. I think that this would be a great kind of gateway series. And for, to keep it up with the times, I'm going to call it 50 Shades of Bruce Wayne. But, it could touch on a little bit of the, sexuality and a little bit of those elements, but just something that can bring Bruce Wayne at the core of a character that I think that people could attach themselves to.
Well, I do hate that title, but I'll tell you more in a second. Chris, what do you think of it?
I actually hate it. It's similar to my third pitch that I was thinking about, but I don't think Bruce Wayne is that interesting of a character to actually explore. To me, Bruce Wayne is Batman's alter ego only, unlike Superman, that Clark Kent is actually Superman in Superman's disguise. I'm getting confused here. Batman is Bruce Wayne. Clark Kent.
Superman is actually Clark Kent, and Batman, or Bruce Wayne, is actually Batman. Wayne is the facade. Batman is the reality.
Right. I do Clark not Kent want to read a comic book out of
reality, and Superman is the facade.
I do not want to read a comic book out of a facade. If it was Bruce Wayne superheroing without the Batman costume, I'm actually okay with it. But I don't care who Batman sleeps with, and that title is quite frankly the worst title I have ever heard.
Well, it would just be a working title. Believe me, I would never actually name that.
The title is awful. Let me tell you something. I think Bruce Wayne. Look, already you got Bruce Wayne, so you probably already got some sales, and you got a miniseries here. Basically, is what you're pitching. Obviously, this isn't going to be an ongoing thing. I think if you're looking at Bruce Wayne, people are going to keep on sitting there going the entire time. When's he becoming Batman? When's he becoming Batman? Where the hell is Batman? Damn it! They're going to want that. And so, I mean, if you're not giving him that, at some point in time, you're going to feel the pressure to put Batman in there. You're going to hear from the fans, and probably you're going to write Batman into the story and ruin the whole thing anyways. I don't know. Then again, I got to keep in mind, this isn't being written for me, like you say. A gateway for a female audience, Batman might be the right character. Maybe they can find him sexy. Maybe we can see something here we can sell. I mean, it's an intriguing concept. I like the idea. I mean, he is a rich playboy. What's Batman going to do? If it's just going to be a soap opera on Bruce Wayne's life, I'm not interested. If it's got some international intrigue and he can't become Batman for some reason, he has to function as Bruce Wayne, and it's got kind of an espionage James Bond type story thing going to it, I could see this working. But based just on what you're saying, I don't know if it's good doing it for me. What do you think, Keith?
I kind of like this idea. One of the things that I wish was done better on the Batman books is to have a unique take on each of the books. You know, back in the day, Detective was detective stories, and one of the other books would have more superhero stories. Legends of the Dark Knight was earlier adventures, so they kind of each had a unique voice, and I don't really think that they have that right now. I mean, Batman and Robin is really a Robin book, but the other three kind of are telling the same types of stories. I think of the title Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, and the goal of that book was to really focus on Peter Parker and less on Spider-Man. It's not that Spider-Man wasn't in it, but it was really about building him a bigger supporting cast and really playing on who the person is when he's not in costume. And that is something we don't really know about Bruce Wayne other than that he has to fake it. Some of the stories that I've read where he's there was that Bruce Wayne Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. that they did during the Marvel DC crossover. There was a great story in the JLI in the 80s where Batman pretended to be Bruce Wayne to go on to do a spy story. Really clever stuff. And yeah, I think that there's something there. Like, I don't think it's about keeping Batman out of it, but it's about telling different kinds of stories that require him to not be in costume. I mean, Bruce Wayne during the day is kind of interesting. I like what Snyder does with that kind of stuff. What is Bruce Wayne like when there's a room full of people and he can't change into costume?
See, to me, like, the truth of the matter is that we're always going after, like, us as fans, we're always looking at the stories that appeal to us as older comic book fans. We're never looking at stories that are going to go outside of those core comic people that always buy the books. You know, we need to get comics that appeal to more than just us.
Yeah, absolutely agreed.
Ultimately, I think it's time to go through and see if we're going to green light this thing or what we see on it. So, Keith, what's your final thought there?
I say yes.
You say yes. And, Chris, how about you?
It dies here.
Okay, well, that means it actually dies or lives here. Like I say, I'm on the fence. Ultimately, I think there's enough potential here, but I think you need to come with us with the more fully formed idea here instead of just kind of the basic broad concept. I need an actual arc here or something like that. I need a little bit tighter feel as to whether or not it's going to be the espionage or the romance or where we're going with it. At this point, I got to say no, but revisit us when you have something a little bit more concise in mind. So thanks for your pitch, though. Get your ass out the door now. Boom! There we go. All right.
Man, you were actually an actual editor, I don't think I'd ever want to work for you.
No, I know. They're not actually this nice. All right. I'm going to do mine. And keep in mind, just because I turned yours down, you don't have to turn mine down just because I know you're going to hate it just to get revenge now.
I hate it.
Just realize the flaw in this whole thing.
I don't even need to listen to it. This is great.
Yeah, this is great. It's like, I hated it. Next, I'm going to do one of mine. One of the things that's always bothered me about Captain America is the idea that he comes back and here's this character. He's never... Where were his parents? Where was his... No, any other family. Cousins. Nieces. Nephews. Sisters. Brothers. The character of Captain America, to me, is not a character that's going to sit there and not want a family. This is a character that's not going to sit there and not... This character is not a character that, to me, comes from New York. This is a character that is a middle-of-the-country, heart-of-America character. And I look at this character, and I'd like to see him try and refine those roots. So what I'm suggesting is Captain America gets out of New York and travels America. He's generally out of the costume. He's generally a Steve Rogers. It is character-based. It is personality-based. It is not so much a hero book and not so much an action book. It's an exploration of the Steve Rogers human being, where he came from, how he got to have the values and the core values that he has, and what he's searching for in the future. Because this isn't a character to me that's going to sit there and be this humble apple pie character and not want, like I say, a family with a normal person. I mean, he's being attracted to him being with all these exotic superhero women and agents and that type of thing. I would like to see Captain America kind of in some way grow up, try and find some family, and try and explore the country. And if he's Captain America, I don't want to see him just in New York. I want to see him try and associate with and reconnect to the heart of America, the middle class, the working class, across the entire country, traveling in different states, seeing different sightseeing different places, and having adventures along the way. So that is my pitch, is Captain America travels America.
I think it was a fine story when it was written earlier.
I was going to say, you're channeling Grenwald there, man. He told that story.
Captain America got on a motorcycle, traveled across America.
And John Byrne talked about that, told the story of him growing up as an orphan in Brooklyn.
Yeah. All right.
That said, I actually kind of would like to read that story again. It's time.
Yeah.
I like the rest of the concept. I do like not so much the settling down thing, but I do like the. You know, he's the man out of time, and now he's even more out of time than when the character was brought back. I mean, he vanished at the end of the war and was brought back in the early 60s. He was a man out of time for 18 years. Now he's a man out of time for 65 years. And, you know, with that sliding scale of Marvel time, that's a much more massive difference of culture than you know, what he experienced as a character in, you know, Avengers number 4. The amount of space between the end of World War II and where that character must have come out now, you know, to have gone from, to have, like, skipped over the 60s and 70s and the civil rights movement, all of these things that would just, you know, you walk out and all of a sudden, all of this has changed. You didn't see the process of it. I think that the way he sees the world might be very interesting. I mean, it's always been interesting to see how people interpret Captain America as, you know, a bleeding heart liberal or, you know, ultra conservative. Things used to be better. So I think getting him on the ground, as long as it doesn't feel like Superman grounded, I think it's got legs.
I would green light it for a story arc.
Miniseries.
Well, that's all right then. I can live with that. I can live with that. I still say even if he was an orphan, he's got to have some family somewhere. He's going to go look for them. Come on, he's going to find a woman. Come on, he's Captain America. That guy wants the bone. Anyway.
He finds lots of women.
He's like Ted Kennedy.
It's 60 years difference. I mean, it'd be a lot of like going to look for your fourth cousins.
He's like a Kennedy, you know?
He brings new meaning to the robbing the cradle. Anything to get Mo off of this
Marilyn Monroe
Kennedy thing that's just completely going nowhere. Could somebody pull in the crickets, please? Because
Brett, you know, I do realize I'm doing the edit on this one. It's going to be all Ted Kennedy. In fact, I suggest everybody continues to do the rest of the podcast as Ted Kennedy.
We could mute you. The Simpsons.
Oh, same thing. All right, let's go on. Keith, it's time for you to make a pitch, sell us on something, and keep in mind, I'm holding grudges.
All right. Well, one of my favorite characters, one of my favorite miniseries when I was young was the Herb Trimpe and Barry Windsor Smith Machine Man.
Now, I'm greenlighting it right now.
Greenlit.
I got two votes right away. So I think it's time to revisit Machine Man as a character. You know, this character was invented as a Pinocchio-type character. He was a machine who wanted to be a human, was programmed to think like a human, but ultimately was a machine. I think that in the technology that we're in now, where so much of our communication, so much of our human interaction happens through machines, to have a machine who wants to be more human at a time when humans spend more time interacting through machines is an interesting dichotomy. I think that this character who, you know, seeks to connect with humanity might have a different perspective on the world today. And I like the, you know, the character so wants to know, so wants to, you know, it, like I said, it is the Pinocchio character. He wants to be a human. He wants to be as much like a human as possible, but it's always faking it. And, you know, and then mirroring that to the way that we interact today, the way that we communicate through Skype, we communicate through Twitter, we communicate through all these things that may or may not be distancing us, but maybe they're, you know, merging the way that we interact with machines. So that's my pitch. That's my concept.
Chris, what do you think?
I really, really like it, actually. It's very timely. stars a character that is in need of a relaunch that still has fans. I personally wasn't a huge fan of Machine Man in Marvel Zombies, where he's completely disconnected from humans. I think this is the way to go. This is a good way to reinvigorate a Marvel property that really is in a tough spot right now. This is win-win. Definitely they can make some money on this.
My opinion on
this
book.
Let's not do that, man.
All right, fine. But I just did, and I'm not taking it out because I'm editing. Let's see here. I think I've read this story a few thousand times. I think I've read this story with Red Tornado within DC. I think I read it. I think I've heard it. I think I saw it with Data on Star Trek. I think of that is not fresh. That said, I do like the idea with you talking about the modern world and how it interacts with that. That is intriguing. The problem I have with this is our world here in Marvel Comics is not the modern world. We've been beyond technology-wise, things like Skype, for a long, long time. So, to me, I'm not sure how you take this character in a world that is a superhero world already technologically greater than our current world and try and ground it in that and make it work without making it seem like you're pulling back the entire universe. I understand what you're going for here, but I'm not so sure it works. Brett, what do you think?
Well, I think the story is really interesting sounding. Ultimately, I'm not 100% sure that it would work for a regular series. Again, this sounds like a really good miniseries that I would absolutely want to read. So, you know, for me, I'd totally be down with a miniseries.
All right. I'm not gonna give it a green light. Like I say, I mean, there was a miniseries like this actually recently. I think it might even have been Jeff Johns who did it on The Vision, what, about 7-8 years ago, as well. The kind of rings similar to this as well. I don't know if any of you read it. I read it. It was good. But I'm personally not going to go for it. But Brett, you're giving a green light then?
For a mini.
And Chris?
Full regular.
There we go. All right. Well, I guess we got some negotiating to do. It sounds like it'll end up being a mini then. But good idea. You guys want to go through another round?
Sure.
Yeah, I say that what we should do is we should do one more regular round, and then if we each have a third, we should do a speed round.
All right, sounds good. Well, Keith, go.
Already? Stupid snake format.
No, this is Mo pick format.
All right, y'all go. All right. You want me to go? I'll go.
No, I got a series. It is a full-on ongoing series. Yes, I want to write it. It is one, two, three, up to six-part stories. It is an arc-driven book, and it is a DC team-up book, time-traveling, jumping around the 52 worlds, hitting times throughout the DC history, and playing around in the multiverse with Booster Gold. The title is The Brave and the Gold.
I'm gonna give it a red light simply for the title.
I'm gonna puke because of the title.
It actually sounds like The Exiles starring Booster Gold.
That's exactly what I want to do.
There we go. See, right there's there. Your pitch for you right
actually,
there. The Exiles, Booster Gold.
But it's him teaming up with literally anyone in the history of the DC universe.
I got to tell you, actually, if you're going to use Booster Gold, I think that's the perfect use for him. Honestly, I think already a time traveling character, and a character who interacts well with other characters, The Brave and the Gold. Actually, as much as I hate to admit it, is kind of a clever title for what you're trying to do here. And I actually think if you're going to use Booster Gold, I don't know that the time is quite yet to do this series. I think that what we're probably looking at is, number one, we're still trying to figure out the continuity here at DC. And we don't want you coming in there and further screwing it up.
Well, really, you could, in this case, you could pretty much do whatever the hell you wanted, and I don't think it would screw anything up.
Also, other people might be beholden to it later. But no, I do think that, and I think that the Booster Gold character right now is a good time for him to take a little break. But I'd say in about 12 to 18 months, I think that this would be something I would launch. I think there's some interesting, fun things here, and I would launch it as a regular series. That said, I'm not sure it would have the sales legs, but it's the type of series I'd take a chance on because, honestly, it's a good way to introduce potentially new readers to characters they might not know, and you never know what might hit or take off there. And you never know what else it could spin into. It might spin into a team book with all these characters in Booster Gold. It might be a way to bring back a Ted Kord if we decide to do that down the road. There's a lot of potential here. So I'm going to give it a go. Brett, what do you think?
It does sound like a lot of fun. I do agree that that right now wouldn't be the time, but I would probably read the book, and I would probably hate myself for it. But at the same time, you know, I'd probably read it. So,
I really like the concept. I think there's some great stories to be told there. However, I also see this as the perfect way to kill Booster Gold forever. You write this series, he becomes the Time Master so incredibly quickly. Separates him from what he is. I love Booster Gold too much to greenlight this series. Red. Kill it now before you kill the character.
Why does no one ever say red light a series? What is a yellow? You never hear that phrase. You never hear that a series got yellow lit.
Yeah, yellow light this.
I don't know. I think that a lot of us are all saying red light against Marvel series right now.
I think I'm getting a yellow light. I think that's what I'm getting a yellow light.
I might be getting a yellow light. Well, he's a Booster Gold. Maybe you're getting gold light. You know? I think if we did a green...
Gold, that's right.
If you did a Green Arrow or a Green Lantern, it would definitely be a green light. It'd have to be, wouldn't it?
Your idea was Skeets.
There you go. Yeah. Skeets can be gone here. Because he's got other characters he's interacting with. Nah, Skeets always has to be there. All right, let's keep moving on here. Chris, give us another one.
All right, my pitch is for a character... Well, this pitch is for a book that I'm tentatively playing with the title of Crime Lord. This is a book about a con artist superhero who may or may not be the son of Maxwell Lord. I envision it as a 12-issue maxi series that each issue he has a con that he benefits from but also helps people. At the end of the series, I'd like him to have become so ingratiated with the Justice League that he's asked to perform some role within the Justice League, not a member. But throughout the series, we should be always questioning his motives. I see a story where he first comes to town and he's a penniless grifter, and he saves the entire tenement from being evicted, yet he gets a place to stay. I would include old DC unused characters such as Snapper Carr in the supporting cast, and you're then unsure whether this Maxwell Lord character has true motives, or is he playing for an endgame to ingratiate himself within the Justice League, or is he bad? Is he good? You're never quite sure. It's sort of a crime book within the DC current continuity.
Does he have powers?
No powers.
No powers. But he is within the regular DC universe. There's some intrigue there, definitely. Definitely. Brett, what do you think?
Does he speak with a Cajun accent?
No.
I actually forgot for a second that you were pitching, and I kind of zoned out for a moment. I really like the concept of the way you included it in the DC universe. Like, I love the idea of being able to use Snapper Car and stuff like that. The overall concept doesn't do anything for me whatsoever. So for me, I'm not really into it. You know, maybe the other two are.
Yeah, I just think it's one of those things where it's like, once again, you see it as a 12 series issue maxi series. I'd have difficulty greenlighting 12 issues. I would greenlight 6, maybe even 8. Again, I don't really know where you go with the story down the road. And I do think that pretty much every time you take a real character and put him in the superhero world, a guy trying to take that more noir, serious look at it, I think it generally fails. I think it's really, really tough to integrate. That said, I like the Shades of Grey type character. I like the supporting cast idea. And it all comes down to the writing. I'd want to see a script or two. And if a script or two was good off the pitch, I would give this a go. What do you think, Keith?
I like the concept. I don't think a new character is the way to go, though. I think that this is... I think renovating a character with this kind of premise would be better. You know, someone like Grifter or not necessarily Gambit, because Gambit is powered, but, you know...
Ambush Bug?
Yes! I would be in for Ambush Bug, totally.
Absolutely due for a revamp. I think it's time to get Ambush Bug back into the new 52.
And, as a noir character who's the son of Max O'Lord.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or
100% sold right there.
I kind of think Ambush Bug would be his uncle. Orbish Lord.
Anyways, I'm sorry to break up your train of thought. Go ahead.
Irwin Lord. I think that this is a better revamp idea. You know, to take a character that's either low powered or no powered, and then you've got a reason to connect them up to the other character. So I think it's the general premise works. I don't think that that's the character. I think that you're grabbing that character just to get the clever name.
It's a clever name.
The other way around, but I love Max O'Lord.
It's a clever name, Crime Lord. I like it. Brett, what do you think?
I like a little more with Keith's edition, but I'm probably going to go on the no.
You're going to go on the no? I'm going to give it a yes. Give me a script or two, and let's see. Tentative yes.
I think I need to see more of where it would go, and you know, the big con job thing and incorporating in these other elements. I do need to see a couple of scripts before I am sure that the con part of it will hold together. Con is difficult to write.
All right.
I share your concerns.
Brett, it's your turn, man.
That's what an editor wants to hear. I got this idea. I'm kind of worried about it.
Yeah. I don't know that it'll work, but I'm throwing it at you.
That's why you need an agent to help you pitch. Brett, give us your idea.
All right. Well, I'd really like to get a little bit more back into, you know, when we were kids and what really attracted us to the medium. And so part of me was thinking about Keith and Power Pack. And so I got to thinking to myself, I would love to see a total reboot of Power Pack, but not like the miniseries and stuff that we've been seeing right now. I don't necessarily want to see the cute Chris G. Russo art or anything like that. I want to see a more, you know, regular comic art style, just like the original Power Pack. I want to completely bring them back to the youth concept, and I really want to just I want to be able to tell stories that don't really tie in to the rest of the Marvel Universe. I think it should be much closer to the one-off stories. It should be, you know, much closer to, like, you know, the kids and their experiences and stuff like that as they gain the powers. I mean, it's going to be fairly similar to the original Power Pack, but I think that we need to kind of go back to that, but bring it, you know, forward in time and actually, because the problem is that the more that we tie it into the rest of the Marvel Universe, the worse off we're going to get, because then we're asking kids to buy comic books outside. I would agree, but I'd rather see, like, oh, Spider-Man makes an appearance, you know, somebody that can be funny, a little humorous, and just bring a lighter take, but with a regular art style.
Chris, your thoughts, man?
I love the concept. I don't know if Power Pack's the way to go. Love the youth concept. Love having individual stories. Really, I think financially, Power Pack has more power, and Power Pack has some cachet to it. And if we're going to revamp, I don't think these are the characters to do it with. I'd much prefer to see original youth characters than going back and doing something that has already been done, especially since we've got a mildly successful Power Pack as it is.
See, I love this. I think this is a great idea. Like, both of your ideas, what I've liked here is that you've come in and tried to present books that can potentially bring in new readers. You did that with the Bruce Wayne one. You did that with this one as well. One of the things that I love about the original Power Pack was those kids acted just like real kids without being completely annoying. They were very realistic, but also very fully formed as characters. And I do think that this is missing in this world. I do think not teenagers, but preteens, who are fully formed, realistic characters that preteens can associate with, but that adults or older people can still relate to because it's well written, I think that's missing. And I like this idea. I think it's something we need to do. And Keith, what do you think?
I almost pitched this exact book. So green light, no reservation, no comment.
It's a go. It's an absolute go. Speed round, Brett.
Did you do a second one, though?
Oh, no, I didn't. Good point. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Thank you. All right. Aquaman's been kind of a bit of a quandary, I think, for writers and editors and fans for quite a long time. I want to take a new take on Aquaman. What I'm looking to do here is Carter Hall is the original Aquaman. I don't just want to have Carter Hall, the Carter, I don't know how you would say it, the alien or anything like that. Qatar? I want to have everybody, what's that?
Qatar Hall.
Yeah, probably. I want to have everybody who's ever been Carter Hall in a team book with the different characters. So I want to have the Carter Hall with the Egyptian background, the archaeologists with the Egyptian background, and the I want to have the alien there at the same time. I want to have Fel Endar. I want to have Zoriel. I want to have Charlie Parker, the Golden Eagle. I want to have all of them tied in, as well as all the different Hawk women in a team book with these guys with essentially the same power, like, but with these different backgrounds and theories and views on the world. Kind of like a Green Lantern Corps. A concept kind of like that, but with Hawkman and sticking to Earth. And also, I probably would introduce Hawk and Dove into this as well and find a way to tie them in and have the Carter Hall character. I'd like the idea of all of them coming to this world and being there from these different 52 worlds or however they come in, him being the key and nobody knowing how they're all rotating around him and how he is the key to it all. What I want to do here is, like I say, is take every Hawkman that people love and give it to them, but give it all a fresh take, interacting with each other. One of the things that I think is key here is the name. We could call it the Hawkman Corps. We could call it just the Hawkman.
So you're pitching a book that only makes sense 15 years ago, using a title that is currently being used for something else.
I would, but honestly, the Hawkman Corps, whatever. I just like the idea of Birds of Prey with Hawkman. It just makes sense.
Talon. How about Talon?
Can't start a Bird of Prey at all. What the hell does that name even mean?
I don't know. I just like
Oracle's
it.
Oracle's not a type of bird. Black canaries aren't a bird of prey at all.
Yeah.
Starlings aren't a bird of prey.
Exactly.
I don't even know what that title means anymore.
But Hawkman. Hawkman is a bird of prey. Hawk. There you go. That's all right. Anyways, give me. What do you think of the pitch? The concept.
You lost me at the word Hawkman.
Okay. I've got it. I can solve this right now. It can tie in. It's in the Brave and the Gold. Booster Gold crosses in with all of the Hawkmen. Bam. Two birds, one stone.
Come on, you're telling the story.
Hey, there's your title of the story arc.
That's
you're
right.
Telling me two birds, one stone.
You're telling me those Zoriel and Earthbound Angel. And,
I have no idea who those characters are. You actually lost me at the phrase, all of the versions of Hawkman that you love. And I am racking my brain for a version of Hawkman that I love.
The Zuriel interacting with the Fel'Andar, the spy, Thangarian spy who betrayed Earth. The idea that they have to be forced to be a team. But they're all Hawkman. Come on.
When did Charlie Brown's teacher join this podcast?
I got lost with Hawk and Dove. Like, Hawk, seriously? What?
Well, they're birds, and his name is Hawk, and it should tie in somehow.
I think that Rob Liefeld should draw it.
Well, then I'm not writing it.
I will give you that Hawk is also a bird of prey.
Should we tie it in? Dove isn't, but should we tie it in all of that bird stuff?
I think doves attack more than canaries do, so.
There you go. There you go. So it's a green lit, right? Hawkman, the Hawkman team. Team Hawkman.
Yeah, I think this actually could get canceled just after being solicited.
I'm scared about our podcast being canceled, actually.
All right. Blow me, Chris. You do a speed round. Let's go. Let's go, real quick.
Okay. Becoming the Bat. Bruce Wayne would not appear. These stories would feature only the characters that trained Batman. Four-issue story arcs. We can have his martial arts masters, his detective masters. Four-issue story arc. Each story arc would have Bruce Wayne coming in at the end.
I think that's great. I think that's great. Green lit on my end. Brett?
I like it. Sounds like fun. I'd probably be in.
I say make it happen.
Make it happen. Get us a goddamn script. Be quick about it. Brett, yours.
All right. So for me, my speed round is I'm sick and tired of Black Lightning the way he is. I want to take Black Lightning so far back. I don't want to have the stupid hair. I don't want to have the stupid mask. I want to make Black Lightning completely blaxploitation. I want to make Black Lightning the toughest son of a bitch that's on the streets. I don't want him to have any kind of secret identity. Because I just want him to be the guy. He's like, Black Lightning is now Shaft. That's what I want to see.
We can call him Luke Cage. No, that's taken.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I would not green light this, personally. I just, not enough of a new hook for me.
Give him the afro, I'm all in. Greenlit.
Up to you, Keith.
Keith doesn't understand the concept of speed round.
You pass it on it. All right.
I said pass.
He's also passing. Sorry,
I gave a one-word response, and you're like, what's taking so long?
That's because I didn't hear your one-word response because of your glass.
Well, you said it. You said it while you said it while you're drinking. You're basically doing some ventriloquist thing there. All right. I'm gonna give mine real quick. Batman Year One is the best Batman story ever told. Why? Because it's the most realistic Batman story ever told. I want to take Batman. I want to take things like flying through the air on strings from building to building and that type of crap and throw that out the window because it's not realistic. Nothing that conceivably somebody could not do, and yet he's still the Batman. I want to see a Batman that needs to, if he's going to go in and take down eight men, doesn't just go in and outfight them because that's, and they have guns because that's not realistic. I want to see somebody who has to outthink them. I want to see a more realistic, stripped down approach to Batman, like Batman Year One, but even more realistic. That's my take on Batman that I would love to do.
Greenlit.
You read Batman Earth 1 by chance?
Pardon me?
You read Batman Earth 1 by chance?
No.
I'd say read that before you get into your script.
Why? Is that what he is?
That's pretty much what they're doing, yeah.
Well, then it's obviously a good idea.
In that case, it's already been greenlit, so we don't have a problem.
One of my ideas has already been done or friggin' whatever. It's a great idea, though. So three more. So all of mine were greenlit. That's the important thing. Nobody else's were all greenlit.
That's right. I thought you were. I was all in at first. I thought you were going to pitch Batman Year 4.
No. Batman, a more realistic take, a consistent, not a miniseries, a realistic take in the Batman series. Keith, give us one that I can shit on.
Commandy. I think it's time
done,
to
I'm
reboot
shitting on that.
Commandy.
Greenlit.
I don't even have much of a concept. This is the speed round for you. I just want to redo Commandy. I think it's time to give a reboot to this character.
Red light.
Red light, green light. Remember that game as a kid?
Keith, you are a genius. Commandy needs to be redone.
You know what? I would like to see Commandy brought back in the modern day age as a commando. And that could be the concept.
That belongs, from the man who pitched Hawkman, Birds of Prey.
The more Hawkman, the better.
Golden Eagle? And Carter Hall, right. These big concepts are too much for you, your little brains. Anyways, all right, that's fine. Let's move on to some Wii Views because we are, Keith?
Saving you from bad comics.
Yeah, I might not put that little tag in because I'm a lazy editor, but we'll see how it goes. let's move on here. The first book we're going to talk about is Ghost. Brett, what do you think of Ghost? Zero from Dark Horse.
Okay,
go ahead and
good.
Give your review. Keith can stop crunching.
Yep.
All right. Well, at the beginning, I enjoyed the way they were tying it into this new craze of paranormal shows, and I thought that kind of made it interesting. By the end, I really wasn't very interested at all. The art really didn't work for me for the most part, so I wouldn't carry on this book. I thought it was going to be interesting, but it didn't go all the way.
Chris, what do you think?
Only reason to buy a Ghost comic book, in my estimation, is Adam Hughes' art, and it's not on this book. Really, the Ghost character has always bored me, and it bored me here. So do not buy Ghost Zero.
Keith, what do you think?
I really like this. I enjoyed the writing, and I'm becoming a fan of Phil Noto, having seen his work in a couple of recent books, including Creator-Owned Heroes and the Avengers trade paperback that Moe recommended to me. I enjoyed it. I thought it was an interesting start. It was a good zero issue. Not sure why it's a zero instead of a one. It just is. I'm intrigued. I'm going to keep going into the miniseries that's coming up.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, too. I mean, I'm a fan of this art style. It's reminiscent of that Whispers book, I think, in the very much about facial expressions, but a lack of backgrounds. So I knew Chris probably wouldn't be a fan of this art style, but I like it. I think it's crisp and clean, and it tells to me the story focuses in on the characters. So I liked it. As far as the story goes, I've always liked the ghost character. I think a really well done ghost book has, for lack of a better expression, I always say ghost has a beautiful soul to it. I think this book has that. I feel like there is a beautiful soul to this book that's about to come out, and I'm interested in continuing to read it. I liked it quite a bit. All right, let's go on to The Pound. Keith, what'd you think of The Pound?
Didn't like it at all. I thought it was cliche, poorly written, terrible dialogue. It was so smug with its... It's more anti-Twilight stuff, and I'm not a fan of Twilight, but I'm bored with the pushback against Twilight more than I'm even bored of Twilight. Next, Chris?
You've got a really good point there. What this book really needed was some Tyler Jenkins, some really good art. The previous incarnation of this book or this universe was Proof, which the characters were actually interesting. And in this incarnation, really, we're getting very genetic vampires and zombies and demons. And they're not really all that interesting at all. Really, there's no creative spark to this. It's a fail. Which is sad, because I really thought the Proof universe could blossom into something much larger and be a lot of fun. But this isn't. This is not fun at all.
You know what? You're right. Proof is a cool book, and this should be able to blossom into something else. But I think there's some really interesting concepts here. But the execution, the skill that's trying to do these concepts just isn't there. From the writing, it's just not strong enough to match the concepts, and the art's just awful. Like, the art is just awful. The look of the book in general, the coloring, all of it, really, really destroyed any chance it had of this book working for me personally. Brett, what'd you think?
I actually just wonder if we read the same book, because in this case, I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I thought I enjoyed the characters, and I enjoyed the writing of the characters. The art, you know, could use a little bit of help, but otherwise, you know, I thought it was a pretty good book.
Okay, all right. Well, three people didn't like it, so obviously you're wrong. And the person, one of the people that didn't like it was me, so, you know, that's good enough to trump everybody else anyways.
Right, Hawkman.
Men who like Hawkman.
Hey, look, it's a good idea. All right, Womanthology, Brett from IDW. What do you think of that sucker?
Oh, Womanthology had some good, it had some bad, and ultimately it's an anthology book, so, you know, I always struggle with anthology books, just because once you read a story, then you're done reading that story, and I don't necessarily expect to see many of the same things pop up again. There was some really good stories in there, and there was a couple stories that I just absolutely hated. The anthologies are usually spotty, so I probably wouldn't carry on.
I was hoping it was going to be silly fun, and instead I thought it was just silly. I didn't have any fun reading it, and that's the problem. I mean, trying to be a book that's both lighthearted and at times poignant, I felt that it just didn't. None of these stories worked for me. I was distracted by just poor execution, poor art, and it just felt silly. I no weight to it for me. I didn't enjoy the book. I was hoping to enjoy it an awful lot more. Chris, what do you think?
I actually loved the concept more than the book. I didn't think the number of pages allotted to each story complemented what they were trying to do. But I really kind of like some of the stuff in there. I would definitely give a thumbs up or a green light to a Womanology imprint over at IDW. I will keep buying the book just because I think there's a lot of new stuff in this book, and it needs to be seen. This is the way we change. I really want to see what's coming next and who the next creators are. I'm excited by this book. If in concept, if not in X.
And Keith, what do you think?
I sort of liked one story. I quite liked one story, and the rest was pretty forgettable. I think that the book needed a bit more concept than it had. If they had said it's all female creators, and this issue is about space, or this issue is about crime. If they had put some kind of framework to it, but I'm not really drawn to they're all female creators full stop as a concept. I think if they all like focus toward the same goal, Epic Magazine used to be that, all the stories would have a crime angle or a fantasy angle or whatever. And even if that cycles issue by issue, go ahead, Chris.
This was called Wimmythology Volume 1 Space.
Apparently I missed that on the cover. But they weren't all space stories. So, I mean, they seemed predominantly, but some of them didn't seem to have anything to do with it.
It had space in the title.
All right. Well, then.
I admit, Keith, I missed that too. So right, don't feel bad.
Well, all right. I still stand by most of what I just said. And I didn't.
I still think. Yeah. All right. Keith, let's do our final book of the week, the big release. We saved the best for last, or at least the biggest for last. The new DC Zero book, Sword of Sorcery. Two stories. The main feature is Amethyst, and a backup story of Beowulf. Go ahead, man.
Sword and Sorcery. Well, let's talk about the Amethyst story.
Sword of Sorcery.
Sword of Sorcery? Is it really?
Yep. Sword of Sorcery.
Yep. Sword of Sorcery.
You can read covers as well as the book.
I'm never going to read that. I'm never going to get that right. This book was announced months ago, and I never noticed that. My brain just filled in the blank. The Amethyst story I quite enjoyed. I enjoyed the way that they were creating this character. I don't have a background with the character. I don't know the original version. So I was intrigued by the way they were introducing these characters and the mother-daughter dynamic. I like the art. I like the storytelling. I'm intrigued to keep going. The Beowulf story I was quite disappointed in. I thought the art was pretty good, but it seemed, it was missing something. And I think what it was missing is, I read Beowulf in English lit first year university. But, as I said about Conan earlier, I can't remember enough of the salient points to know why a retelling of this in the future is worth telling. I didn't like the backup story. I did enjoy the front story much more.
Chris, your thoughts?
Really enjoyed the Amethyst story. I'm a little concerned with where it's heading. I'm never a huge fan when a character shares two worlds. It didn't work with Adam Strange 60 years ago. It's not going to work now. But the world of Amethyst here seems so rich. I wanted to know more. Add in gorgeous art, and you got me hook, line, and sinker. Love that book. The Beowulf story, definitely weaker. But, I mean, as long as it remains a backup story and they don't start switching positioning in the magazine, I'll read it. But I'm only reading it because it comes free with the other one.
First off, the artist on Amethyst, Aaron Lepresti, loved him for a long, long time. Of course, he was doing Sludge back in the day at back in Malibu, and I've been following him ever since. I think he's just awesome. So, I mean, the art in this is, I think, just beautiful. I'm talking about the art from the last, or from Ghost. It's like that, but with far more detail, I think. Just really good work. The story itself, there's one or two or three instances where there's a character or a plot point that is just ridiculously stupid or forced, or I just really turned me off. But generally, it flowed very well. There's some intrigue as to where it's going. It's a quality book. I just think that, you know, so there's actions that some characters take that are foils for the hero that just I really didn't like. I just thought it was out of place. That said, I did enjoy it, and I will come back to it despite that. I like Beowulf more, actually, because it didn't have that. I like the story, and I'm not as familiar with the character, and I was kind of intrigued and looked to learn more about him, and I thought the art in this was also good. So I do give this a win, despite a few things that I think that I wish weren't there. Brett.
All right, can you hear me now?
Yep, yeah, go ahead.
All right, go back, listen to Keith's review, because it's pretty much exactly the same as my review. Good book, not so good book in the back. So, like Amethyst.
Like Amethyst. All right, Brett, let's get the hell out of here. I, of course, already said I'm Mo at We Talk Podcast, M-O, no E in my name, Mo_WeTalk. Brett, why don't you give your any plugs you might have, and I want you to share the little story from last night when you put your son to bed, what he said to you for the entire world, including the guys here, because it's awesome.
All right, well, then I have 3 points. Well, besides so Brett, B-R-E-T-T _WeTalk on Twitter, Brett at WeTalkPodcast.com. I want to say, as far as last week, Chris, I agree with you about 80s comics, that the more that you read them, the easier they are to read. I would also like to say that that as far as the shock moment books go, the number one and only book on my list is Walking Dead, because that book seems to shock me almost every page. And as far as my son goes, he's kind of latched on to Godzilla recently, from a Scaredy Squirrel book, oddly enough. And
I like him more than you right now.
I just agreed with something you said, and you don't like
Wouldn't
me?
Wouldn't take much, though. Wouldn't take much.
But at any rate, so I was putting him to bed, and he looks me right in the eye, and he said, "Daddy, Godzilla lives in your dreams." And it was just one of those moments where I'm like, I wanted to laugh my fool head off, but I was just like, well, you are my son.
Oh, that's great.
That's awesome. I get this text from Brett all of a sudden, about a half after I was talking to him about the fantasy football podcast that we do. I get this text from him saying, "Tristan just said to me, dead serious, as I was putting him to bed, Godzilla lives in your dreams. You can't make that shit up." That's awesome.
No, you definitely can't. Awesome. Otherwise, just putting up a couple reviews on Comicosity. So that's it for me.
Chris.
I am Chris at WeTalkPodcast.com, Chris_WeTalk on Twitter. I just got the Godzilla vs. Megalon DVD that just came out after a long waited time. Do not waste your money on this movie. I love Godzilla, but that is definitely the worst of the worst. Keith.
All right, you can email me at keith@wetalkpodcasts.com. You can follow me on Twitter, CubReporterK. Next week, coming up just after the rest of the number zeros for DC come out, the Comicosity will be hosting the New 52 timeline, which we are calling the History of the DC Universe 3.0. We have gone through the what I call team timeline. Six of us went through every New 52 comic that has been published in the 13 months of the New 52, and we have created a timeline of every time reference that is there. And a lot of excitement, a lot of people interested how it all fits together, and amazingly, it pretty much all does. It's astounding that there's only really...
Get the hell out of here!
There's really only... We're going to end up with maybe... with probably three characters that actually have significant problems. Deathstroke, Damien, and I'm expecting Red Robin to have a bit of a glitch. But it's
pretty impressive. What about Frankenstein?
Works fine.
What about Frankenstein?
Works fine.
Really?
There's nothing to conflict with. I mean.
That's true. Up against the rest of the universe.
Just giving credit where credit is due, who on Team Timeline jumped on the grenade that is Rob Liefeld?
I read most of the Liefeld. Someone else, actually, my buddy
brave,
Matt.
Brave man.
My buddy Matt had the Hawk and Doves, and I was the one that went to a quiet place in a comic store, so I didn't have to pay money for these.
Can you guys imagine how cool it would be if Hawk and Dove were in a comic book with a bunch of Hawkmen?
Yeah, absolutely. Now that you say it that way,
maybe Rob Liefeld could write it.
I do have
Rob Liefeld could.
I do have some reviews going up on Comicosity, and my. The stated goal when I started reviewing for Comicosity, that I told Aaron at the beginning, that I just achieved it. I have a pull quote on the back cover of the Peter Panzerfaust trade paperback. Quite happy about that.
That's cool. All right, and hey, by the way, we're going to try and do something too. Those of you who are wondering why we're reviewing, we've reviewed the three new books that are zeros from DC and none of the other zeros. We're going to try and do something for that, for all the remaining 52 books. We got a show concept that we're going to try and pull off. This should be a lot of fun, coming up for that too. So you will hear from us on that. And, other than that, we talk fantasy football. Like I say, we talk podcasts. Longbox Graveyard, just put up a new show. It's, him talking with his son Miles about, who's never not known the world without 9/11. And, just a very different type of show. Comic book related still, too. And, I'm going to record with Joel Mulvey, writer and artist of Scam from Comics Tribe. We're going to do Mojo Show 3. Should be coming up this next week, too. So lots of good stuff. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we're OUT.
Did you mention the Comics Podcast Network?
Oh, no, I didn't. The Comics Podcast Network. Listen to them, too. OUT.
I will give you $30 to never do that again.